A Prairie Home Companion is made possible by Pillsbury Crescent Dinner Rolls, available in your grocer's refrigerated section. Warm, light, flaky, buttery Pillsbury Crescents can help add wow to holiday dinners.
Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, Minnesota, my hometown, out on the edge of the prairie. Winter came on suddenly here this last Tuesday, just came in suddenly, and we got about 10 inches of snow in Lake Wobegon. You could still hear those woodpeckers, but they were pecking a little slower on Wednesday, and they were sort of playing a slow two-step instead of a jig. And a lot of cars in the ditch and tow trucks out, and the sound of snow plows and steel scraping on concrete. Beautiful, beautiful snowfall. Our relatives in the Southwest and in the South called us to offer condolences, but there are no condolences. It is the most beautiful, beautiful time of the year. And Christmas coming on now. What a glorious time back home. I miss them. I miss them. Miss them all. Although Christmas was not a peaceful or contemplative time in my childhood, one's mind goes back to the Christmas when Dad fell off the barn roof. That was a dramatic one. One goes back to the Christmas when the dark angel of projectile vomiting came to our house. One goes back to the Christmas when we attempted to roast a goose for the first time and produced thousands and thousands of pounds of fat from one goose. The year that I forgot to take the little plastic bag of turkey parts out of the bird. And it was discovered by my mother when she went to scoop the dressing out from inside the cavity, and she came up with this sort of half-melted, blackened bag of something. And she put it onto a saucer and took it into the kitchen, and nothing was ever said about it. It's completely overlooked, thank goodness. Oh, there are all these dramatic, dramatic Christmases. My mother worked so hard at Christmas. She did all of the decorating and the cleaning and the baking and all of it, trying to raise up Christmas up to her own high standards. She was a warrior, and she worried about us slipping and falling on the ice. She worried about us putting each other's eyes out with sharp sticks, and worried about the little kids eating the toilet bowl cleanser under the sink, and worried about older children falling in with bad companions and taking up worldly ways. And she worried about a meteorite hitting Earth. And of course, it would hit our house. It would come straight in at us out of the cosmos and flatten us completely. And she worried about Christmas tree fires. She read a story in the Minneapolis Star about a family that was standing in their living room, and they were singing Joy to the World, and then the tree just went up. Spontaneous combustion. They'd left the lights on too long, perhaps, and it just went up in flames like something out of the Old Testament, except there was no prophetic voice from within the decorations, and they all dashed upstairs screaming, and they had to jump out of second-story windows and into snowbanks, which God had provided for that purpose. But their house was burnt to the ground, and all of their photographs and everything was lost, and their children's finger paintings and everything that was precious to them. She memorized that story, and it meant a lot to her. As a result, our family was the only one whose tree was on only for a minute at a time. Just little brief moments of illumination. Then it was turned off. There was water kept nearby, sand, gallons of water were kept there. And at night, she covered it with a moist sheet. She got up in the night to sprinkle water out of a watering can on it, as a result of which it became sort of mildewed and moldy. Not an appetizing Christmas tree at all. We had to try to dry it out with a hairdryer. in the morning. They worried about us. They worried. It's the life of constant paranoia, the life of any parent, and they had a lot to worry about. They warned us about frostbite, of course, so that we always wore scarves wound around our faces until we got out of sight of the house, and then we threw them into a ditch. They warned us against breathing through your mouth. Always breathe cold air through your nose, lest you frost your lungs. That's how they put it. You will frost your lungs. And we imagined it, walking around, playing. You forget, you know, you forget. You just respirate, you know, willy-nilly. And you feel this tightening in your chest and this coldness in your chest. Your lungs are frosted. You drop dead in the snow because you were a mouth breather. You go down. They warned us against putting our tongues onto pump handles or iron railings in the playground. Should never, 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 never do that. As a result of which, we came to think of this as our fate. This would happen to us. They warned us against it so fervently that we could imagine doing it and just would be unable to prevent yourself. You would come within the force field of a pump handle, and there you would be, and your tongue freezing to it. And there you are, bent over in this humiliating position, praying to God to send somebody with a blowtorch or a hairdryer or something. But no, somebody comes and just cruelly yanks you away, and a piece of your tongue comes off. Blood is running down the corners of your mouths like a vampire, and you will lisp for the rest of your life. No matter where you go, you will carry this little speech impediment that will tell the people you meet, you put your tongue on a pump handle, despite all that your mother told you. No, we lived in a certain amount of fear, but it was a beautiful, beautiful time, and it still is. And when the snow falls, a big snowfall, then it becomes all time and all that is new and strange and different is covered with snow, and it becomes your childhood and your parents' childhood all over again. The sound of steel against concrete is the same sound you heard as a child. It's the most beautiful time. You take your toboggan up to the top of the hill, and you look out from this high prospect, and you see the grain elevator, and you see the steeple of Our Lady of Perpetual Responsibility, and you see the Lutheran Church and the Mercantile and the Sidetrack Tap and the Chatterbox, and you see the Sons of Canute Temple and the faint aroma of lutefisk drifting up to you from down there. Tina used to make the most wonderful lutefisk, and she's dead now, but still, it's pretty good, this codfish which we eat in memory of the ancestors, the food of poverty, which is dried so that it looks like elm bark and then has to be reconstituted with a lye solution and then rinsed over and over and over and over again, but never often enough so that it does sort of taste like soap when you eat it, a kind of gelatinous fish that to some people looks like congealed phlegm, but they're Swedish meatballs for those people. And down there is Skoglund's Five and Dime, full of wonderful things that I coveted as a boy, beautiful ballpoint pens and a diary bound in green leather with a flap around the side and a lock. You could lock it with a key. The thought of leading a life so thrilling that people must be forcibly prevented from reading about your life. When I finally got this as a Christmas gift, I wrote entries in it. I made up things. This is where fiction begins, young people. She was tall. She was beautiful. She was an older woman of 19. She smelled of mysterious cologne, and she walked up close to me, her lips trembling, and she said, "Would you mind buttoning my dress?" She had misbuttoned her dress so that there was one extra button at the top, and I had to unbutton it all the way down to her knees and start over again from there. I made all of this up, and then I wrote in a whole string of numbers and letters, as if what happened next was so mysterious and wonderful, it could only be written in a secret code. I wrote in my diary ostentatiously and locked it with a flourish and left the key where anybody could have found it. But nobody did ever. It was a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful Christmas gift. And then I met her, not that winter, but the next winter, down there at that skating rink. I'm looking at it now from the top of the hill, kneeling here on my toboggan. There's the skating rink, and you can hear them playing hockey down there. And you can see that couple skating out across the ice. You can see that man walking across the ice of the lake, and he runs a few steps, and then he slides with his arms out for balance. He's an old man. He's 40 or 50 years old, and he's running across and sliding across the ice as if you were a boy. I met that girl in that very same warming house down there. I was changing into my long blade skates, and she sat down on the bench next to me. She was not from our town. She had reddish hair that fell down onto her shoulders, and I could see when she changed her socks that she had painted her toenails a very suggestive shade of red. She was beautiful, and she was sitting 2 feet away from me as she laced up her skates. And then she said, "Do you have a cigarette?" I was 14. "Yes," I said. And I said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot them at home." "Oh, that's okay," she said. "I have a few here in my purse." And she reached into her purse and she pulled out 2 pell-mells and gave me one. I held it between my fingers. I'd seen how to do this in the movies. She gave me the book of matches and I lit one, and she held my hand as I held the match to the tip of her cigarette. I have never, ever seen anything so graceful and suggestive and powerful as the way she held my hand with the match in it. And she took a deep drag, and then I lit my own cigarette for the very first time in my entire life. And all of the other kids in the warming house who were members of Youth for Christ looked at me in wonder and awestruck admiration. And I took a deep drag on the cigarette, and I leaned back against the wall, grateful that there was a wall there. It had a big effect on me. It's not that it made me sick, it just had a bigger effect than a cigarette had on other people. It was a life-changing experience. I was so grateful for that. And then the guy came and said, "What are you doing?" to her, and led her away out on the ice. I wrote all about it in my diary. You can read it someday. I'll bring it to the show. I'll bring the key. You can read the whole thing. Christmas, what a beautiful time. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong all the men are good looking, and all the children are above average.